Thanks for finding the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Williams and producer Pete here with Jane Oates, the senior policy advisor and recent president for WorkingNation.com. Jane, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, John. Great to be with you, even on this numbers day.
Yeah, what's going on there? Were you surprised?
I was surprised. I thought we'd have between 150 and 200,000. So 114 shocked me, especially since it's the first time I can remember that the BLS number was below the ADP number. You know, when that ADP number came out this week, I knew we weren't in for a great week, but I never expected it to be 114.
Tell me what those numbers stand for. What are those acronyms?
ADP is the payroll processor, and every jobs number week on Wednesday before the Friday BLS numbers, they put out their numbers. It's supposed to be a very accurate look at what payrolls have been in the previous month. So usually that number is below the BLS number because it doesn't include government. You know, it really is private sector. So this was unusual for me. So I was kind of shocked at it.
And the upshot of all of this is what? You thought that there would be more jobs created.
I did. I thought, you know, I was thrilled, by the way, to see the construction job number up, you know, 25,000 new jobs in construction in July. That signals to me that all that money that's been pouring out for infrastructure from the federal government and from the states is really starting to translate into
right.
job creation. That's good
yeah.
news. But, you know, people are building things. Why isn't manufacturing going up? Why aren't they making more things? I mean, every job site needs at least concrete, right? So why aren't we seeing increases in manufacturing? That's disturbing to me.
Well, is that unusual that those two run in different directions? You would think manufacturing and construction would be allied agencies. And I do understand that the federal government has put a lot into infrastructure and roads. I go by it all of the time. But they're also doing a lot to help the manufacturing sector. So what's the disconnect?
Yeah, I don't know, because usually you see it's like a three-legged stool, construction, transportation and warehousing, and manufacturing. Usually they support one another, right? That's the supply chain. But you would, just like everything else post-COVID, it's chartering a new course, right? Nothing is predictable. But I do hope those manufacturing numbers go up, because you and I have talked about in the past, manufacturing just creates wealth in communities. It's such a great sector.
So the market is responding today. What was the last number we just heard? Off about 800 points on the Dow. Is that just a one-day flip, or do you think this is signaling something larger?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert in the market, but my limited experience would say to me, hopefully it's one day, because I think everybody's going to start speculating that the Fed, because of today's numbers, will not only, you know, think about, as they said, doing a cut in September, but maybe a half a point cut instead of a quarter point, which would be really nice. Talk about the relief that families need.
Yeah. The quarter point was already sort of baked into the markets. We've had a nice little run up here to 41,000. It's funny, because the last thing you want is a panicky Fed either. You do want them to anticipate what is going to happen and then be in front of this sort of thing, which they weren't a couple of years ago. You're the first person to hope for or suggest that maybe a half point would be in the offing.
Well, I'm not alone. There's a couple people rumbling about that, but I think that's all good speculation, right? I mean, maybe if we start talking about a half point, we'll definitely get at least that quarter point in September. I think everybody is struggling with the interest rates. You know, it affects everybody, every household. Their credit card interest is through the roof right now, and mortgage prices are through the roof. And these small businesses that often need to do short-term loans just for cash flow have been paying interest rates that are almost out of their reach.
On the line with us this afternoon now is Jane Oates, a senior policy advisor, previously the president of Working Nation. She follows jobs and working throughout the country. Some of our listeners have texted in with some comments about the numbers that you're talking about, Jane. This one says, John, the Fed was slow to raise rates, and now they will be slower to lower them in manufacturing. Many I've talked to are seeing lower volume in manufacturing. The next one says, a lot of manufacturing firms have started to get robotic machines. Would this affect the pay numbers? Now, what's your answer or thoughts about those two messages, Jane?
So I definitely share your viewers' concern about manufacturing. You know, the ISM, you're going to ask me what that means. It's a manufacturing index that actually, just like I explained with ADP, they look at real data. ISM index looks at orders. And that went down, it's been going down since March. It's been under 50 since March, and above 50 is a good number. It definitely means that manufacturing plants are not getting the orders that would cause them to give people overtime to create a third shift and add jobs. So that's not good news. But we hope that before you went to break, you said, yep, is this the time to panic? And I'm not panicked yet. This is a tepid month, a mediocre month. It's not a horrible month. We're not back to 2009. I mean, there are still 8.2 million open jobs as of the end of June, which is the last JOLTS report. So still, the economy is still chugging. It's just chugging a little slower than it has been since January.
4.3%. Yeah, that was the number I was alluding to. I said it's not 7%. It's not 8
right.
or 9%. It's 100% if you don't have a job, but most folks can still find work in the United States, right?
Well, I mean, I think people are having a really hard time finding a job that they really want, a career path. Can you pick up work? Absolutely. And we've all done it, you know, throughout our lives. When you needed to make money, you picked up a job. But I don't want to tread lightly for those people who are really having a hard time finding that career path, a quality job that's full-time, that gives them benefits, where they're valued by their employer. I always feel sorry for those people, and I want to make sure I hope there's not many of your listeners in that boat, but I'm sure there are some, and I want to be respectful of them.
I talk to so many people who have two jobs or three jobs, four jobs. And I don't know that there's enough conversation or sort of interpretation of that. How are those people getting along? What's the prospect for them, either higher wages or better full-time work? Yeah, they're working. Yeah, they're gobbling up those jobs. But as you alluded to just now, those aren't necessarily career paths. They're just cobbling together a living. And I don't think we talk enough about those people.
Oh, John, I agree with that. I mean, I think about a person like you're describing that's juggling, you know, all their life responsibilities along with two, maybe three part-time jobs. Think of what that's like, trying to make sure you don't take hours at job one that exclude you from getting time at job two. I mean, and working all the time to please your manager so that you keep getting the hours that you need. No, I think it's a really hard life. You think about stress. And to me, that's the most stressful work situation you can be in. I really feel for those people, and look for a time when they can get, you know, if that's what they want, and I hope it's what they want, a full-time job and a career path.
And for some folks, yeah, they got that full-time job, but it's $16 an hour, and they've got a couple kids, and that's not enough. So then your spouse works, or you both work an extra job or an extra half job. You know, I think there are a lot of people that are getting along that way. I don't know what the resolution to that is. Higher wages, I guess, would be helpful, a lower cost of living. Talk to me a little bit about wages and inflation. What are you hearing or seeing out there?
Well, obviously, over the last 12 months, wages have gone up 3.6%. That's a great sign, right? That's because we argued for years that wages were stagnant. The fact that we've seen a 12-month increase this month, in July, it was only an 8-cent an hour increase. But if inflation could cool down, that could be the nirvana spot. You know, if prices go down and wages go up, that's when families feel relief. With the inflation the way it has been, it's starting to cool. But, you know, with the way it has been, I mean, people go to the grocery store and they're really deciding between milk and eggs. they're not getting both in many cases. And that's a hard place to be. So that's what I'm optimistic about. Let's keep these wages going up, and then let's really work on getting interest rates down and breaking this inflation hit that we've been going on. Gas, food, you know, mortgage rates, everything that we can talk about is all related to all of this.
Trades are always looking for people, and construction is still doing well, manufacturing not. I wonder about that, too. Not that everybody can be a plumber or carpenter. It's labor intensive, and it requires an apprentice program. But I wonder if those industries are getting the employees they want.
You know, I still hear from, especially with the building trades, you know, with the unions, that they still have people, they have more people applying for their apprentice programs than they can accommodate. Because, you know, they won't add slots just because there's demand. They look at demand on the other side. They want to make sure that every apprentice they put in the program is going to have good work. You know, they're going to have work to do as they move up in the trade. And even the apprenticeships that are not registered are not taking everybody that applies. So there's been this birth, or maybe just an expansion, of pre-apprentice programs, because you can imagine things that the schools may not be teaching the way they were before, like measuring with a ruler. I mean, you have to be able to measure if you're going to work in manufacturing. You have to be able to measure if you're going to work in construction, or else you eat up the profits by, you know, cutting an eighth of an inch when you should have cut, you know, a 16th of an inch. So I think these new programs for pre-apprenticeships will make sure that people have the skills they need and probably make it even more competitive to get into these apprentice programs.
Do you think AI is eating into some of these jobs? Maybe manufacturing, robots can do work.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think looking backward, the robotics in manufacturing has just made it safer for human beings. The sector that I'm really concerned about with AI, and you saw a big drop in July in this, I think the drop in information was 20,000 jobs. I mean, those are the jobs that are, unfortunately, things like production, telecommunications, data processing, web searches. I think that's a sector to watch in the future, because that could be the canary in the AI coal mine, you know, showing us this is where the job loss to AI is likely to start.
It's funny, because I had a doctor's appointment not that long ago, and in the past, they would always have a physician come in, and then I don't know what the title is, but essentially a stenographer, somebody that would type into the computer what the doctor was saying so that they would in real time update my record. But the last time I went to the doctor, as I think it was the dermatologist, she's doing a scan on my body looking for what. And as she's doing this, she's just talking into AI. The phone is transcribing and summarizing what she's saying. It was happening just like a human being would be doing it, but now it was artificial intelligence.
Wow. And you could see that job disappearing, right? That poor person that was doing the transcription before, where is he or she?
Yeah. Oh, I think they ain't there anymore. Maybe they are. Maybe they use them more often than I know. But that did happen to me. This listener says, in higher education, there are very few full-time teachers. Hired adjuncts are hired and no benefits. In higher education, there are very few full-time teachers hired. Adjuncts are hired and get no benefits. Part-time jobs only for post-secondary teachers. Something is not right. I'm not sure that
I
understand her
completely. Agree with your
really,
listener.
Because I thought teaching was a good job to have right now. School districts need new teachers.
Well, school districts are hiring, and they hire full-time. The only part-time people they hire would be substitutes. But I think your listener's talking about community colleges and four-year colleges, where they are, you know, community colleges have always operated on a majority adjunct faculty because it kept them nimble. And now the four-year colleges are doing it more and more. And I think it's not to save money. I really think that the four-year colleges are doing it to get people that are working in their field to come in and give relevant, you know, real life to the curriculum, so that you see it a lot in journalism, but you see it in pre-med even now, people coming in to talk about things. The problem is your listener is exactly right. I mean, the average adjunct is paid by the course that they teach. So they're paid like between $2,500 and $3,500 a semester. And so in order to cobble together a living wage, they may teach that same introductory English, for example, class at four different colleges. Think about that. Yeah. That goes back to your part-time worker, right? And many of these people, most of them have at least a master's degree. Many of them have a PhD in their subject content area.
All right, Jane, we're out of time. Jane Oates, Senior Policy Advisor, and previously the President of Working Nation, still got her finger on the pulse of our working nation. Jane, let's talk again. Thank you for your help today.
John, thank you.
Ed Kugler's on the line, whose 50-year involvement in local farmers' markets makes him a bit of an expert, and there's a pretty good farmers' market or markets going on. Ed, welcome to WGN Radio. Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I am doing fine, and thank you again for this opportunity to tell everybody about our one-of-a-kind all-day market, August 7th, in which, you know, from 7 to in the morning till 8 at night, we'll be having freshly made breakfast, lunch, and dinner availability, and also, you know, trying to get the word out about the National Farmers Market Week, which is, you know, August 4th through the 10th. And it's a perfect timing for our market to celebrate its second annual Taste of Ravinia Farmers Market on this coming Wednesday.
Yeah, you are with the Ravinia Farmers Market. RaviniaFarmersMarket.com is the website. So I presume it's at Ravinia?
Yeah, well, it's right in the Jensen Park at the train station, the Metro train station in Ravinia. Actually, it's the little town next to the festival area.
Got it. And then the Taste of the Ravinia Farmers Market is what you also alluded to. So is it both? Then is it a farmers market, which I can imagine is what that's like. But then there's also Taste of, so you have food vendors as well, hot food, that sort of thing?
Well, the way it's going to work, the morning half from 7 to 1, we'll have about 40 vendors at that market. And then from roughly 2 o'clock to 8 o'clock, there's a change out. And then we'll go down to about 35 vendors, but that could increase before Wednesday. And the emphasis that we're trying to do there is that we've got Maya, the executive chef from Bellaroo Catering, that will be offering a farmer's market to table, cooking demonstrations, offering samples, full portions of per purchase, and recipes with a shopping list of on-site vendors from which to buy the ingredients. Whole idea is we're creating something called the Farmers Market Cafe, utilizing the vendors from our market.
So I could go there and eat the food, but also buy the food to make it on my own.
Yes, and there would be recipes from Maya's sampling that she's going to be doing that day. And we're looking to continue this relationship with Bellaroo Catering during the season, remaining all the way through October 30th is our last farmer's market, because our regular market is always 7 in the morning till 1 o'clock in the afternoon every Wednesday until October 30th.
But this is the Taste of. Can you give me a couple of examples of the sorts of things they'll be cooking up then?
I actually don't know Maya's exact menu, but I know that she was going to be making crostinis with different toppings, vegetable toppings, utilizing the farm, the farmers and the cheese and the bread from the various vendors that were attend our market.
I think that's such a good idea. I mean, a lot of us go to farmers markets and we see these beautiful fruits and vegetables and maybe honey or, you know, the various things you see there. And you're not exactly sure what you're going to do with it. And sometimes you buy it and then it goes to waste.
And with Maya's addition to our market, we are looking to really help educate people how to really practically use all the ingredients that you can find at a farmers market, whether it's ours or anybody's. It's just a way of, you know, a better use of the product. And, you know, the other neat thing that we do is that we're the only farmers market in the country that offers free Ravinia concert tickets each week during the season that they provide to us. And we get do a free drawing every week. And for this coming August 7th, you know, our starring tickets are for ZZ Top and Leonard Skinner, Pavilion Seats. So there
perfect.
You go.
And then you do actually have music. I'm looking at a rundown here. The live music
yes.
schedule includes a whole host of bands from 11:30 in the morning to 8 in the evening.
Right. Life Rhythms and the Highland Park Community Foundation help sponsor that whole music component.
Okay, Ed. Well, it sounds like you guys have a terrific idea, but this Taste of the Farmers Market is just the one Wednesday, right? The 7th?
Right. And, you know, the other thing attached to that is that the business district of Ravinia is doing a sidewalk sale. Okay. And so I've recruited, because with the help of the Ravinia Neighbors Association, we've coordinated over close to 20 of the merchants to participate in this event, as well as have an in-store specials going on, 15% off. If you mention the code word RFM to the merchants, and we're trying something new in the town itself. So it's a more than just a market; it's an all-day celebration in the town of Ravinia.
Okay, the code word is RFM, as in Ravinia Farmers Market. What a fun, clever idea! I'm glad you guys are doing this, Ed. Thanks for telling us about it.
Okay. Thank you again for this opportunity to get the word out. Appreciate it.
Ed Kugler is the market manager, RaviniaFarmersMarket.com, WGN. More business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new report says two high-income earners leave Illinois for every one that moves into the state. According to the data compiled by the Cato Institute, Illinois is the worst at keeping affluent people. The Cato report, titled Interstate Migration of High Earners and Retirees, uses Internal Revenue Service data. Florida was on top. For every high earner who leaves the Sunshine State, nearly three move in. The report shows Illinois is also near the bottom of the states for retention of people 65 and over. A separate analysis shows the lost income from all Illinois out-migration at about $10 billion in recent years. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has issued an emergency order that lifts summer fuel requirements in Illinois and three other Midwest states. It comes as the area faces a gas shortage following a power outage at a suburban Chicago refinery. The order will allow the sale of certain blends of fuels to help increase gas availability. The ExxonMobil refinery near Joliet lost power after a tornado hit nearby. Gas prices in the Chicago area have shot up to their highest level since 2022. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food. Now Steve Alexander.
And it's a Mr. Fizz Friday. Jim Fizzell, our gardening guru, is here. And Jim, we have a listener question about tomatoes.
Good.
Right after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. In my inbox was a question, Jim, from Linda in Lyle asking why her tomatoes aren't turning red. She says her plants are full of tomatoes, but they're all green. Why? What can I do about it?
Well, you know, I'm getting a lot of tomato questions, too. That's just one of them. First of all, it's just one of the tomato problems that we're having right now. I think it has a lot to do with the strange weather that we're having. It's too hot, too cool. They're not ripening very well. But once the plants are mature, that's kind of a whitish green. It takes just warmth to ripen them. Best is about 85 to 90 degrees. The plant will do no more for them after they get to that mature green except support them. So if you want to be sure that you can get them to ripen under control, pick them and wrap them in newspaper and set them indoors. It's going to still take time for them to ripen. Or put them in a paper bag with a ripe banana. The ethylene from the banana will hasten the ripening maybe by half the time. Another question. The first beautiful tomato had a black bottom. What happened? Well, that's called blossom end rot, and it's due to a lack of calcium in the fruit itself, in the tissue of the fruit. You can cut that off, and the tomato is safe to use. The last question I'm getting quite often is, my tomatoes ripened. That first one that I went out to pick had a bite right out of the side of it. How disgusting. Well, that squirrel's doing that. They take one bite out of the tomato, and of course, then it's spoiled for everything else. What I use is a have-a-heart trap. Doesn't hurt them any. You bait it with peanut butter, which they absolutely cannot resist. you're going to have a squirrel. Then the problem comes, where do you take the squirrels? It may be worthwhile to locate someplace to relocate them before you start catching them. We all have these problems at one time or another. It's best to notice them early and fix them before they do too much damage.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, our gardening guru. On the food calendar, today is National Ice Cream Sandwich Day, and it's International Beer Day. Remember, no farmers, no beer. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
We often talk about job opportunities, and actually sometimes it's training opportunities. Cheryl Hudson-Jackson joins us now with a unique program. Thanks for joining us, Cheryl. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. You're the director of the Breedlove Entrepreneurship Center at the YMCA of Metropolitan Chicago. Tell me a little bit about the program.
Well, I'm going to correct you just a moment because we're the girls, not the guys. So we're part of the YWCA Metropolitan Chicago.
Yeah. I said M, didn't I? Pardon me.
yeah, you did. You know, but that's okay. That's all right. Yes. So the Breedlove Accelerator is a program with the YWCA Metropolitan Chicago supporting later stage women of color entrepreneurs in a cohort that's creating an empowering community to help these business owners scale their businesses and create and generate generational wealth.
Sure. So are you talking about women that are already in business or people who have an idea and they want to get into business?
This particular cohort is working with individuals who are in late stage businesses. So these are individuals who presently have a business 2 years or more. They have been running their businesses and they're the majority owner and their annual revenues are $100,000 or more.
And they want to maybe scale up now. Is that the idea?
Absolutely, because oftentimes once you start your business and you're starting to gain momentum, then you're trying to figure out how to scale it, how to diversify it, how to make sure that you're in the right lane of growing your business, being able to look back at the original business plan and then say, you know, where can this business go? What's the trajectory? And putting the right tools and resources in place so that growth can germinate.
Is it hard for those women to get funding?
Absolutely. What we have found in the data supports it is that, you know, women are the fastest growing segment of entrepreneurs in the United States, but 70% of the women who seek funding are denied. So that's the case. You think about that. If there's 1.5 million businesses and yet 70% of them are not getting financed through traditional methodologies, that means that they have to do some bootstrapping and try to figure out how to collectively come together to bring those resources needed to, in order to grow their businesses.
Sure. And so is the idea to shore up their application so they do get traditional funding, or are you talking to them about other ways to expand without a bank loan?
Actually, it's everything. It's actually looking at their businesses, their business plans, their executive summaries, going back and making sure their P&Ls are tight so they really do align themselves to traditional banking institutions or traditional funding mechanisms so that they can go in a better state with a great pitch and being able to articulate very clearly where they see their businesses going, as well as to actually create their own collective to be able to either barter or network to be able to grow their business and scale them in non-traditional ways.
Cheryl, what's an example? Tell me about one of the businesses, one of the entrepreneurs you're talking about.
So presently, we just graduated our sixth cohort, and we had a diversity of business owners, and one of them that is working very diligently happens to be a Layla Bitoy's Sweet Treats, and she started her business on the west side. She's been able to scale her business in a way where she's providing a cottage number of products that she knows that she can scale, keep the integrity of the taste and the way the product is delivered in a way where she's been able to look at her numbers, scale them down, be able to make the kind of quantities that are needed. And mm-hmm. through our cohort, she has presently just been invited to be on HSN. So, I mean, she's gone from just being a Chicago favorite, and now she's going to have a national platform to be able to go on TV, talk about the quality, the deliciousness of this particular product, and being able to do that kind of massive promotion and sale at that kind of scale. But that took the opportunity to look at the numbers, really understanding how the product's being made, delivered, making sure that the integrity of how it's being delivered in Illinois can actually be realized nationwide.
Yeah, right. If you're going to go on Home Shopping Network, you better be ready to scale up. So then are you're looking for applicants, right? They can still apply for the next cohort into August, right?
Absolutely. So applications are now available on www.ywcachicago.org. The application date deadline is August 12th. So those who are interested, please feel free to go out to, again, ywca.org, Breedlove, and the application is on our website.
We're out of time. Are you specifically looking for women of color? Is that the applicants that you're looking for?
Yes, that would be the focus group, because typically they are even in more peril than just the aggregate group of women. So absolutely.
Yeah, well, I remember a number, and I don't call it off the top of my head, but I remember being amazed by, during the pandemic, how many women of color became entrepreneurs, started to find ways to hustle on their own. And if we can give them the resources to scale up, as you said, then go get them. Cheryl Hudson Jackson, the director of Breedlove Entrepreneurship Center at the YWCA Metropolitan Chicago. Cheryl, good luck. Report back to us.
All right. Thank you. Have a wonderful Friday and a great weekend. And thank you so much for your time.